Hello and welcome to Kitchen Kosti, the podcast that delves into the heart of food service equipment and the hospitality sector. I'm your host, Radford Chancellor. And today's episode, we've got a couple of fantastic guests lined up. I've got a culinary artist with me, Craig Edgell, who is the Margate chef. He's the former head chef for Two Rosette restaurant called The Boy and Oyster, a National Chef of the Year Presentation Award winner of 2026. And he's also just been nominated for National Chef of the Year for 2027, so he's one of the runners-up. He's now founding his very own catering business, the Margate Chef Catering Hospitality. Later on, coming back on, a familiar voice that we've had before, Carl Hodgson, who is the Managing Director of Adandi Refrigeration. He joined me back in Season 1, which seems a lifetime away now, but Carl brings 35 years of food service experience to the table, and we're going to be discussing Adandi, painted door technology, and also the changing market. So anyway, let's get on with the show and welcome Craig. So Craig, welcome to Kitchen Kosti.
Good morning. How are you doing?
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
How was your journey?
Long, 2 hours, but we get there.
No fast train up today from Margate.
Not today, too many connections.
Yeah.
Costello Market in London's not always easy, but we get there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, better than Lion Eye, come on, because Guildford, it's never running. It's cancelled most of the time. So just to kick us off for some of the listeners, you're a Kent boy, if you like.
Yep,
that's kind of where you were brought up.
Yep.
In Dover, I think you said to me, with your grandparents. Just a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so basically I was born in, well, Dover, just a little village there called Lydon, just outside Dover, near Lydon Racetrack, brought up there. My nan had a farm, just brought up there with all the animals and everything, and then slowly worked my way around and moved myself into Thanet, so where I'm a Margate lad now, born in Dover, but now in Margate.
And you were the head chef of the Boy and Oyster till recently, I think.
Yep, so I left there just before April.
Okay, so. And now you're running your own private chef and catering.
Yeah, private chef, Margate Chef Catering Hospitality. So I do my own thing now, private chef, weddings, post-work dinners, just getting hospitality back into hospitality. Hospitality's hard at the moment, and it's like giving the hospitality to the people what they want.
Yeah. Okay, so, you know, if we go back, what made you want to be a chef? Like, what was the driver, if you like?
So my dad's actually a chef. He used to work for P&O Ferries back in the day. He was like, he worked for P&O off the port and in his family time, so it's easy for him to be in the port and then be home at night. So I started to just following my dad, really. Then I went to Thanet Technical College, now East Kent College.
Yeah.
Trained there for 3 years. And then, went to London, done a few months in London. I thought, you know, what could be done in London could be done down in Kent. So I come back to Kent, been with family, and I'm here now, 25 years on.
Wow, okay. We don't look old enough for that, so.
I feel old enough, 40 years. Well, 90 years in chef's terms.
So, you know, when you're not running a high-pressure restaurant, you know, or running your business or do competitions, what kind of things do you cook at home and how do you kind of relax, if you like?
I cook all sorts at home. My partner's vegetarian, so it's always quite hard. I've got two children, Eddie and Lily, as well. They're quite fussy, like most children.
Yeah.
I go to gym a lot. At the moment, I'm love training, but I do like a burger at the same time.
It's
one of them. But I like to get up early in the mornings, 4:30 in the morning, train, and then get into the kitchens and crack on with my day. It just helps mental health as well, and my day-to-day going, really. Just gets the endorphins up, ready to go. The energy's in there.
So, I mean, we just talk about the Boy and Oyster for a little bit, if that's all right. You were there 7 years, I think.
7 years, yeah, 7 years.
It's a long time.
That's the longest time I've ever been there. It was like home from home. It wasn't my business, but it was my baby. I love that kitchen. It's like my place to go.
And where was it from when you kind of started it to when you just recently left?
So
you take it on a journey? I mean,
no. So the owners, Simon and Dean Morris, they contacted me and said, "Would I be their head chef?" And I went there, and they were just literally refurbing the restaurant at the time. And I remember walking in the kitchen, and it was a tiny little galley kitchen. And I was like, "I'm a big boy, like I'm not going to be able to fit in there." And he was like, "Don't worry about it. It's going to be changed over." And so and then I come back a week later, and then obviously big induction suite was going in from controlled induction, and then the Adani fridges were being put into the suites as well, and that's when it started. So
okay.
And then I worked side by side with Simon Morris, the owner and the original head chef. And we side by side with him for a good couple of years. And then we've just been on this journey together for 7 years. So it was a really good stint. I loved that place. I was renowned for the clean kitchen. On a Sunday, we'd be there early in the morning, polishing, got the baby oil out, making sure that oil was polished into the hood and on the fridges. The social media went mad, your kitchen's so clean. I put money, a £100 bet on it. It was probably the cleanest kitchen in Thanet.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so.
And thinking about Kent, the food scene's kind of changed. Obviously, now there's quite a lot of English wine as well in that area.
Yep, there's so
many.
Have
you seen that kind of change? Or
yeah, I've seen lots of changes. Like, there's so many wineries open. The weather's so hit and miss. Like, look at us, like, we're heat wave and then it's torrential rain. Like, there's so many vineyards opening out. And with that, it's incredible because with wine, it supports your food a lot better because you can match your wine with a dish. It just uplifts everything, and that's the hospitality experience, right?
And the food kind of offer, is that changed or is it...
What, from my...
I mean, in Kent, I guess it's always been seafood and...
Where I was at Bourne Oyster, it was always seafood. We was predominantly seafood as a seafood restaurant on the beach, but we always had to have a good meat offering because a lot of people don't eat seafood. They're scared of it. We know more about space than we do our own waters, right? So we have to go put a good meat option. So we had a good couple of meat options on there.
Okay, but, steaks and whatever.
Steaks and bits and pieces, like hearty food. But obviously, seafood was the main problem. We had 14 boats going out daily. We had fresh catch every day. Like, it was amazing. Really, really good. So, yeah. Okay. But seafood's really the predominant thing in Margate. It's where you come to get your oysters, get your cockles, get your whelks.
And before, you've been the Craft Guild of Chefs National Chef of the Year, I think semi-finalist a few times.
Yes, it.
Which is no easy task. What's that like for that competition? Drift to cooking competition. How does that work?
So obviously, when I was at Bourne Oyster, we was hottest season. We're up to 350 covers a day, which is a lot of covers.
Okay.
So we had to be consistent, and we had to be literally ready to go, game time every day. So managed to get National Chef in there at the same time was always quite hard. So obviously in the daytime we'd be cooking, and evening be cooking, and in the mornings, early mornings, where I done my training. So like where I practice my dishes and that. So it's 5 years now. So obviously semi-finalist this year. So I've been five years stint of the National Chef. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we win it this year. It's been such a journey. It's been an absolute journey. So semi-finalist for 5 years.
Is there quite a lot of work needs to go into it? Or
a hell of a lot of work. Yeah, it's not what you think. Like, it's just a normal competition. It's from the planning, from the get-go. You've got to write your menus. You've got to write your ingredients list. Your recipes have to be on point. It's none of this just copy and paste off Google or ChatGPT. You have to write these recipes because there's the top Michelin star chefs around the country are judging you, not just on your cooking, but your whole ability as a chef, from the paperwork to the cooking.
Wow.
It's not just a cooking competition. It's prestigious. It's probably one of the best in the country.
Right, okay. And where's it held? Is it?
So it goes up to Westminster College this year.
Yeah, okay.
So that's the semi-final entry. So the semi-finals for this year is Westminster College. And then there's another bout in Sheffield as well, Sheffield College.
Okay, so it kind of moves around depending on...
That's it.
Yeah.
So you've got 20 people at Sheffield, 20 people at Westminster, and then whoever gets through from the semi-finals will go to the finals and be 20 chefs, so 10 from each semi-finals go in, and that'll be held at the Cordon Bleu this year.
Right, okay.
So it's quite exciting, but obviously we've got...
It's quite an undertaking.
It is. It's crazy, because this year, like the last three or four years, has been a video. You have to do a video of your dish. You make a dish for a semi-final entry, and you have to see how you look on camera
beforehand.
That's what it was like, but due to COVID, so obviously you couldn't get into kitchen, so they've done this new thing where you do your video, do your dish beforehand, and you put yourself forward for a camera. And like most chefs, it's hard on a camera. The amount of times I'm like, rubbish, swearing, you see some of the outtakes, honestly, especially like censored, it's terrible. But now they've gone back to the original format where you have to cook in a semi-final. Now that's exciting. So you actually get into cook this year's a two-course menu, a main and dessert, and then whoever gets through to there goes through to the final. So you've already done a cooking stage, and then you're going to go to a cooking stage again. So it's none of this worrying about being on camera. Well, it is, because they're going to live feed it.
Yeah,
but there's none of this.
But you don't have to pay attention.
You're
in the zone.
Exactly that. So it's just literally full. You're doing what you do daily, cooking every day, and you're in an environment surrounded by amazing chefs, like some of the best in the country.
Mm.
So when you surround yourself with good chefs and good people, you're going to be good, right? And that's why I've done it for so long. 5 years, I've loved it, because I'm surrounding myself with amazing people.
So Margate Chef, catering hospitality, you're going out on your own. It's quite a big step, I suppose. It is a big step.
Massive step.
It's challenging times as well, internationally. What was the thought behind that? And, obviously, I know you offer catering, but what is it that you offer, if you like?
So the thought behind that, so I just woke up one day after 7 years. I was like, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. I'm nearly 40.
Yeah.
Chef's year is probably 90. Like, I'm like, I need to do something for myself now. And I always wanted to do something for myself, but how do I go about that? Obviously, restaurants at the moment are suffering badly. Staffing, pricing, like, every energy is so expensive, everything's so, and Bourne Oyster being the biggest restaurant in Margate, it was pressure, and I could see it, you know. And then obviously I didn't want something that big, I just wanted something a bit more personal, I wanted to do something. But when I had my notes in a boy, I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I know I need to do something. So I thought, you know what, I've made a good brand for myself, Margate Chef. I've been Margate Chef for a little while now, I've got a good following, and I thought, let's try it, let's give it a go. So I've gone from a salary to zero. Right. I was like, that was the biggest shock, right?
Yeah.
Wow, okay, now it's ride or die. We've got to do something. I've got family support, I've got bills to pay, let's go at it. So obviously went ahead, put the wheels in motion and got it up and running. I had some amazing support from followers over Instagram. I do a lot of work on Instagram.
Yeah.
So all my pictures, because obviously food is visual, right? Mm. And lots of, and it's all the real social media. So everyone goes mad about social media. It can be the be-all and end-all. You need social media today. Everyone's got a phone in their hand, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's got the access to social media, they're always looking, scrolling.
Yeah.
So that's your marketplace. So I use social media a lot to showcase myself as a company and speak to people that I wouldn't really speak to on a day-to-day basis. So I can speak to someone from a different country around the world every day, you know? And I might not even meet them in person, but they're supporting you.
Yeah,
it's conversation. Conversation is important, and that's what we did. So I started doing that, got a ball rolling, and obviously I needed a kitchen. So where I am at the moment, I rent my property, and I thought, I can't do my business out of my own house, and I wanted a place to go so I could cook outside my house, so I can keep my home, and this is my work. So I was very lucky to be invested in one of my old ex-chefs, Jessica Lear. She's got a catering company called Jessica Lear Catering, and she's done it for 16 years now, and she's like, I'm going to invest in you now, Craig. You come and work with me in my kitchen. Two businesses going out of one kitchen. I've got Margate Chef Catering Hospitality. She's got Jessica Lear Catering. And we just work out the same kitchen and doing our own businesses. And if she needs help, I'll help her. If I need help, she helps me. And it's just having that support network there to push forward.
Bit of collaboration.
Exactly that. Yeah, exactly. And pushing hospitality forward. And that's one of the things. Bourne Oyster is an amazing place. The food was brilliant. The service was amazing. But it was just busy. And for me, I was getting to the stage of life, I'll slow down a little bit now. I want to enjoy the food.
This time of year, imagine it's packed out.
Oh, mate, you saw Margate Beach, it's like ants all over the beach. It's like, it's busy. But I just want to slow down a bit and enjoy the food and enjoy hospitality, because where hospitality is going right now is, it's a minefield. You don't know what you're going to get. So I just wanted to offer a package, a bespoke dining package, whether it's a wedding, whether it's a personal dinner, whatever you need, or parties, you've got the sole attention of me. So, in the restaurant, my team was amazing, but we was always so busy. So people, it was an open kitchen. So people would walk past the kitchen, and I'd banter with them, joke around with them, and it was a really nice environment. Upselling dishes, speaking to people on the seafood bar, it's incredible. But when we got busy, we had to graft.
You had time for that.
And I haven't got time to talk. And that's part of hospitality. You need to be able to talk and engage and explain. Mm. And I just thought, you know what, it's time to step back a little bit, enjoy the food, and enjoy the people around me. Because a lot of people come to Bourne Oyster just to eat Bourne Oyster food, but also I've got friends and family that come in and see me as well. So I thought, you know what? It's a plan to calm down, enjoy the food, but also do it in an environment where I can thrive and they can thrive as well. I get time to speak to these people that invest in me. I just felt like I was...
So you're doing private dinners for people?
Yeah.
It could be a wedding or events? Or
anything you want. So, for example, you've got a private dinner. So a lot of my customers are coming down to Margate. They're from all over the place because they stay in Airbnbs. So I can literally jump on, give you a menu, take your deposit, and I'll be there on your day. Everything's done, your menus, all table laid up, all your food done, wash up, clean down. You ain't got to do a single thing. I'm your personal host for the night, and you've got me for the night. Like, once you've deposited me in, you've got me for the night. 24 hours of attention, done. Thank you very much. Yeah. And that's hospitality for me, giving back to people
coming out for parties or family gatherings or whatever. Yeah. Really private service,
exactly,
really nice.
Yeah. Like this Saturday, I got a big dinner for 30 at someone's house. It's an anniversary. She contacted me, would you do it? Went there, planned it all, worked with the client, and she's so excited, I'm excited, we're doing something together, because we're not just my food, it's not just about me, it's about what the client wants.
Yes.
You know, I love to cook food. I always have my own ideas, but also they have their ideas and they're paying the money. And that's the biggest thing, where everything's so expensive, people want to know what they're getting, right? And they want to know their value for money. Mm. So I'll work with a client on a personal basis going, okay, you want that? What about that? If you want that, let's buy that. And work with them and build something that's going to, a celebration. I'm not a product, I'm an experience. So I want to offer an experience that you'll remember and never forget. That's my business plan anyway. So.
Yeah, I think that's a really good business plan. I think more and more people, they want that kind of experience, don't they, than just a meal.
It's memories.
Yeah,
it's
they want something a bit more. And if you're having it at home, I mean, how personal is that? How nice.
You got that whole person. And also, there's no times. You've literally got me for the whole night. You can stay as long as you want. You know, you've rented accommodation. I can come in and be your server for the rest of the night. You've got me. You know,
yeah.
And that, for me, you've got full hospitality attention. And that's what's sometimes missing in hospitality, where you go to places, because you're just turning over. And not just Boar and Oyster, they turn over, but they're the biggest restaurant in Margate. Mm. So they have to be busy, they have to be working, they have to be working hard. But they're also offering a service as well. But I wanted to offer a different service. I wanted to offer a service that I could give more on a personal basis, talking to the customer and giving back to the customer.
Okay. And just sort of going back, you know, like, you've been mentored by Michelin star chefs, and, you know, you've worked some nice establishments. Obviously, now you're running your own business. What's the kind of, is there a single bit of advice that you've been given by these people, or isn't there, or is there something you can, you know?
I'll tell you, it's get comfortable being uncomfortable. It's a situation. If you're uncomfortable, you're going to find the best version of you. It's hard, don't get me wrong. When you throw yourself into something and you're like, oh my God, sink or swim. Get comfortable being uncomfortable, because you will find the real you. You will find at the end of it, I did that, I smashed that, and look where I am now. I spent my whole life doing that, and look what I've achieved. 7 years, 2 rosettes, and 5 years semi-finalist, 2 years into the final as well, and I brought a national presentation award away.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is achievement.
Yeah, I like that. Get comfortable being uncomfortable. I like that.
It's, you know, it's so easy just to sit back and just let life crack on. But if you don't do and get up every morning and
challenge yourself,
how are you supposed to succeed in life? How are you supposed to give everything you got? You've got to be comfortable being uncomfortable. That's the way.
If people want to find you, how do they get hold of you?
Social media is at Margate Chef. More the Instagram. I hate Facebook. It's just a pen for like criticism and people, keyboard warriors. But Instagram, yeah, I'm always on Instagram. And margatechef.co.uk. That's my website. You can book on there, contact me. And I'm always available. Well, I like to chat. I like to talk. I like to conversation. It's very important.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to actually take a short break.
Yep.
I'm going to go on and speak to Carl, if that's
amazing.
Okay. Obviously, it'd be great talk to you. I'm going to invite you back for the group chat, if that's okay.
Yes, cool. Perfect.
Perfect. Cheers. Thank you. Now joining me, I've got Carl Hodgson, Managing Director of Adandu Refrigeration. Carl, welcome back to Kitchen Curiosity. How are you?
I'm great, and thanks for having me back.
How's life for you and Adandu? What's been going on?
Well, since season one, a lot has been happening in the industry, really. We've been helping operators focus more on the pressures that hospitality have today. Like, you've got the obviously energy costs, food waste, labour shortages, inconsistency. So at Adandu, we've spent a lot of time listening to the chefs, trying to understand what's important to them. Personally, I think it's even more passionate. I've been even more passionate about the idea of refrigeration just sitting in the corner, when we want chefs to understand the refrigeration, how it can improve their workflow, they reduce the stress for the chefs as well, which is quite important. Mm. So we're trying to focus more on what it can do for you in the positions that they're in, whether it's in the cook line, in the pass, etc. So I think it's very important that we kind of dovetail what we're selling them and making sure they're getting the best use out of it and what it can do within the kitchen environment.
I think, Adandu's kind of changed the way that chefs look about refrigeration, from my perspective, because I hear chefs asking for an Adandu, a bit like they would ask for a certain combi manufacturer, whereas I don't get that from any other fridge manufacturer, I think. How have you, like, created that? You know what I mean? Like, people ask for the... that's what they associate it with,
No, you're quite right. I mean, you can go back the years when people used to want a vacuum cleaner, but it wasn't. It was a Hoover.
Mm.
And Dyson comes along. We want a Dyson, but it's not a vacuum cleaner.
Or people want a combi, they say Rationale.
Yeah, correct.
And, you know, that. But you've managed to achieve that with your refrigeration as well, making refrigeration kind of sexy or interesting, whereas before it was just a box that kept things cool.
Well, that's the part of the problem. You've got hot products and cold products, and you'll find if something doesn't tend to make revenue or return on investment, you've got to try and make it sexy.
Yeah.
And that's the issue you've got with refrigeration. It doesn't. It just sits there, doesn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, it's most probably the number one product you need in a kitchen, because how are you going to store your food in a safe manner? You're not. So you need refrigeration, yet people don't think of it in that way.
Yeah. And people don't really think about it until it breaks down, I suppose.
Correct.
And then
all hell breaks loose.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, you've been in the sector 35 years. I know we covered this a bit on season one. But, you know, when you first got in your working career, did you ever think you're going to be like at the forefront of refrigeration technology as managing director? I mean, what were you thinking about?
No, I mean, like most people in hospitality, your journey, you kind of get there organically. It's not something that you go out to and try and drive to or understand where you want to be. So, you know, early on, I realised that the Adani Draw system was an innovative product.
Yeah.
It was different. And if you want to sell something different or show something different, showcase it, that's what you want. You don't want to be the same as. You've got a unique selling point. And that's the difference with the Adani product. It's a complete unique selling point. There are, since the Adani product came out, other products that look like Adani, which have recently published, but mm-hmm. not quite work like Adani because we've got the patent and technology. So there is a difference.
Okay.
And that's the point that you're trying to push and make people understand. It's the awareness and understanding. It is different. And me personally, when I first hooked up at Adani, there was no sales brochure. There's no pricing. It was a complete blank space. There was nothing there.
Oh, seriously?
Oh, yes, 100%.
Wow.
There was nothing. I had nothing. I didn't have no marketing materials. I had nothing. It was, we're producing this. What do you think? And at first I was pushing back going, no, because the guys that actually were starting to drive the product weren't from the industry. They're all businessmen and they didn't quite understand the industry. So it was quite difficult to try and show them and focus that where industry change takes years. That's part of the issue. I mean, you look at the US, which I drive a lot in the US, and I drive the product range in the US. Innovation in the US, they tend to follow up Europe. You would think that they'd be driving it forward. They don't. It takes a long time in the UK and Europe to evolve. The US, it takes even longer. So, you know, in the beginning, it was very difficult. But as time goes by, most people now, they see when they come to a draw system, they want the Adani draw system.
Definitely. So how long ago was that when you first started?
18 years ago.
Right, okay. So that whole journey to really becoming the market leader in the draw system technology. From really, what was an entry point, really?
It's an entry point. Most people told us it wouldn't work because obviously also chefs were used to 1x1 gas from pan draws. Ours is obviously 2.
Yeah.
So you've got a huge, huge volume there to look at. But a lot of chefs would go, I prefer that because I can see more quicker and it gives me access quicker.
Hmm.
So I can divide the draw up how I want it. So that driven it. But once again, it's all about getting those SKUs and what they can put in there and also driving it forward. What ideas do they have to be able to put in the draw to be able to get access to it quicker? Whereas before, they tend to just use a 1x1 and, you know, certain products will go in that draw, next draw 1x1, certain products will go in that draw, having a larger area. It just made it quicker access for them to speed up the process workflow.
And I think for me as well, I like the versatility of it, you know, that you can have it as fridge, freezer, you know, blast chilli if you have that option, whatever.
Yep.
So you can really put it where you want and then have to think about it because the chef can chop and change depending on their service. So just talk about the patented aspect for people that might not know. What is it that makes you different to, say, a traditional upright refrigeration manufacturer in the patent and the technology?
So the patent is really all about the insulator container. Cold air obviously sinks, hot air rises. By having the insulated container, the cold air just stays in with the product. If it stays in with the product on a horizontal seal, then obviously you've got that drawer closing and opening where the cold air doesn't drop out.
Okay.
Whereas traditionally,
in that
environment,
container.
One of the main drivers is obviously, like I says, is the horizontal seal. All refrigeration has a vertical seal. We have a horizontal seal.
Yeah.
And what you've got in that insulated container tub is in a magnet. And when they lock together, you've got a microclimate inside there. And one of the other major benefits, we have no fans in our drawers. Fans dehydrate the product, take some moisture out of the product.
Okay.
Whereas ours is gravity fed.
Right.
So it's gravity fed air just dropping down into the container.
So that's the big difference, really, is when you open a big door fridge, all the cool air just drops out.
Yeah. Then you get fluctuations in temperature, which obviously then...
So then the hot air, in this environment, particularly if the kitchen door's open, the hot air goes in and the fridge has got to get all that out.
Correct.
Okay. So, you know, you talk about, like, hold the cold. I think is that an Adani thing, say?
Yeah, it's a patent for the cold.
You know, how is that benefiting food waste? Is it what we're just saying there, basically? It's about stop tearing the product as much because you're keeping it colder longer?
Because every time you open a drawer and it gets environment with warm air, it's penetrating that, but also it's taking the moisture out of it. So your yield on a steak, for instance, on a burger, would actually shorten. Okay. So we've actually done tests of that. And we've done tests with that, one of the major brand big archers, shall we say, where they put their pâtés in, and they proved that the Adani product held, the product's better for longer, and the actual moisture in the product was better. So that means the yield when they come to cook it was larger.
Yeah.
And it kept the moisture in
there. So the end product for the customer is better.
Correct, yeah. And especially on fish. It's a big thing on fish as well.
Right, okay. What extended the shelf life?
Shelf life, but also the quality of the fish as well.
Okay. So then that looks good on the restaurant because the customer perceives they are getting a better product.
They're getting a product, better product, but it does depend, don't get me wrong. Let's be honest, if you're churning over your food in the actual fridge quite often, you wouldn't see it. But if it's in there for more than like 2 days, then you would. You'd see a difference.
Of course.
Overnight you wouldn't, but in 2 days you would.
Yeah.
Especially when it's a warmer climate, especially the kitchen hasn't got air conditioning, which not everybody has, et cetera, et cetera, where it's hotter.
Okay. And then, you know, utility costs, they're a massive issue for everyone now, ever since COVID and all the geopolitics in the world. You know, how are you kind of dealing with that as a manufacturer?
So once again, it's all about messaging. If you go back the 10, 15 years, the technology hasn't changed, as we've said. The utility and the kilowatt per hour in the Adani draw hasn't changed. We use the same compressor, hydrocarbon refrigerant, so it hasn't changed. It's always been there because we were already there 10, 15 years ago.
Right, okay.
Whereas people are now catching up. We understand that. However, we're still rated pretty much on the top rating as an A or an A+, if you want one, in the Adani fridge range only, or fridge freezer, it's a B. But still, the kilowatt per hour is extremely low on that. And you can run an Adani draw for 24 hours for around about 12 pence.
Wow.
So a day, so it's quite low.
That's very low, isn't it? Yeah. And I think that's, you know, people buy refrigeration off the internet. There's obviously cheap products like E-rated or D-rated. I guess there's quite a difference in costs there in running it.
There's a difference in costs, and once again, your return on investment is down to how long is it going to last.
Yeah.
Some people like buying twice. Some people because they can't afford to buy what they want.
Yeah.
So, but they want to get in business, especially startup businesses, and I get that, I understand that. Mm. But there are other ways that we can help them purchase the Adani draws. It isn't just that you've got to, you know, purchase it outright.
Yeah.
We actually help chefs. We actually try and understand it.
Okay.
There is certain financial plans that we can help them with and put in place for them.
Okay. To get them to access the product.
Correct,
and then they get that return on investment.
Correct, yeah. They get it back.
Because exactly that, it's a false economy, isn't it? You buy a cheap fridge for 900 quid or whatever that is, and it's just burning power.
Correct. It's burning power, but also, like I say, it's down to the consistency inside the fridge and the product you're storing in it.
Okay.
We've got someone like in Harrods that holds dates in Harrods in our fridges.
Right.
Because the dates are really expensive and they have to have, the temperature has to be optimised. Okay. Don't forget, our temperatures are an increment of 0.1 degree. Most fridges are 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
Ours can go 0.4, 0.5, so half a degree, 0.6.
So really accurate.
Accurate, correct.
Really, really accurate, depending on the product that's in there.
Correct, yes. Okay. And that's why, to be fair to Dandy, Michelin star-wise, we've got, I should imagine, when it comes to draws, majority of Michelin stars use Adani. So we're Michelin stars to QSRs.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think that's why chefs want it, for that accuracy, for 100%, that,
yeah.
You know, retaining of the product, quality?
Yeah.
Maybe we can ask Craig that when he comes back in the studio, what he thinks about that. And is there any sort of, without giving away anything, any game changers or anything you want to talk, you know, that's happening or has happened, that's coming up in the market, do you see? Or,
well, we are, you know, one of my biggest things that I think I've been harping on to the R&D team is we need another draw. We went down a grab-and-go cabinet called the AirCell technology, which has now proved the technology, and we're out there trying to license that and drive that forward in certain other markets, not so much the UK. UK have now driven into doors. So if you go into supermarkets, they've all got doors on.
Yeah.
So we're now looking at the US and Australia and Asia Pacific on the technology and that. So we've now gone back to the board with the team at Adani, and I'm trying to drive them with a new draw concept. So we will have a new draw concept that within the next 6 to 12 months.
Okay.
Which will hopefully be exciting and pretty good.
Okay. And what are the most popular products you see people buying? It's obviously the drawers, but is it the under broilers? What?
I think majority of people go for the under broilers first, and then with the griddle on top, etc. But the most popular seller one is a double drawer system.
Okay, like because under counter.
Under counter, they can have fridge, freezer on one side. Okay. I mean, most probably the most specific areas, most probably in the pastry section.
Yeah.
They drive that, or in the pass as well.
Yeah.
For finishing off.
Okay. So should we just come into the end, Carl, of this section of the podcast, but you know, without giving away too many secrets to your competitors, is there any sort of broad trends or challenges that are coming through with food safety or efficiency that you're focusing on or thinking about?
Yeah, I think the number one thing is more and more people want to understand what their temperatures are going, whether they're going up or going down. So we're looking at Wi-Fi connectivity within the fridge systems, potentially not retrofitting them, but as we move along going forward into a new stage of refrigeration. So that's what we're looking for. It'll allow the customers to look on the app, understand any faults that are about to happen on the refrigeration. They can see the temperature rising and then there's a problem. Then they'll be able to obviously, you know, it's all about getting maintenance there as quickly as possible to stop that from breaking down completely.
Yeah.
So they'll be able to view that on an app that would work.
And we're seeing more kind of connected kitchens. Yes. More people are wanting that, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they're wanting. That's the future. You want to be able to have that connectivity. Part of the issue that we have in the industry for me is there's not one connectivity that suits all.
Yeah.
Every different manufacturer's got their own connectivity, and that's the part of the problem. A poor chef goes, right, I've got about 10 apps now for 10 different products around my kitchen. If there was one that could just, you know, like a compare.com for kitchen equipment, that's what we actually need in the industry. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, to rationalize it down to one or two different apps. Correct. That'd be it. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's what we're currently working on at the moment. We're trying to drive that forward.
Something for the FEA.
Yeah.
to bring to them. Okay, well, Carl, thank you for that. We're going to take a short break and hear a bit more about Adandi, and then I'm going to invite you back with Craig and get into a bit of a group discussion.
In today's hospitality world, performance, efficiency, and reliability matter more than ever. And that's exactly why so many leading chefs, operators, and consultants continue to choose Adandi. Known globally for their award-winning refrigerated drawer technology, Adandi has transformed the way professional kitchens operate. Their innovative systems are designed to hold temperature more consistently, reduce energy consumption, improve food quality, and perform under the pressures of even the busiest commercial environments. From Michelin-starred kitchens and major hospitality groups to stadiums, hotels, and workplace dining, Adandi Refrigeration is trusted where performance really counts. To find out more about Adandi and their professional refrigeration, visit adandi.co.uk.
So now I'm going to ask Craig to come back in the studio. He's back in the studio, actually, and Carl's still with us. And we're going to talk a bit about a chef's perspective working alongside a manufacturer, also kind of why Craig has been so vocal and loves the Adandi drawers, you know, so that would be interesting to hear what's important for him with products like that. So Carl, you know, you've seen kitchen setups change hugely in the last 35 years, and Craig, you know, you're currently running a catering hospitality business and you're obviously running a very successful restaurant. Where do you see the commercial kitchen heading in the next kind of 10 years? Is it more automated, more compact, or is it something completely entirely different?
Like Carl was saying, like to have like an app like compare.com or something like that with all the apps, there's so much technology now available in your hand. If there was something that we could put, merge it into one and create that environment where chefs can see click, 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 the efficiency would be a lot easier. That's one of the reasons why we had Adandi at Boy and Oyster.
Right.
Because the high footfall and the speed we had to go at, we needed them. We literally, it's the first, when I first started the Boy, it's the first time I found Adandi. You know, it was integrated into the control induction suite. And then speaking to Simon, the owner, I was like, we need more of these to make this, because Simon designed the kitchen at Bourne Oyster. So it's literally, there's no carbon footprint because we're in one spot, but we just needed something that can make us more efficient. So next summer, we got a set of more Adandi fridges. We had the stackers. Yeah. So we had a two-tier stacker and we had another two-tier stacker, which was the chilled at top and a freezer at the bottom.
Okay.
And we was efficient. we were like well-oiled machines. The team were like, wow, this is incredible. We've got everything we need all at hand, pull away. And that's what made Bourne Oyster efficient. Not just because I'm the head chef, I'm a conductor of everything that's going on. The team behind me, I couldn't do anything without the team, you know. And that's what they needed. They needed the help, and they got the help they needed through a dandy because they got all their prep done, they got everything they needed, and it was just one hand pull. There it is, it's all there, clean, tidy, all in sections, ready to go. For me, happy days, it was really, really good.
And I guess because that cold air stays in there, the product is better or less. Yep. Hot up and down.
So literally, like Carl says, like when you open a one big fridge, all the air comes straight out. With the dandy drawer, you pull it once and it stays in there. It's gravity fed, it stays in there. Everything stays nice and cold. Everything's beautifully clean, tidy. There's no mess. It's just the biggest thing. When you're working in a high pressure environment and you're so busy, it's so easy to create mess. When you've got one hand pull on a drawer and you've got everything at hand touch ready to go,
trying to keep the chefs in those little stations they're working in, that little, and they're highly productive.
Exactly. So we had, when in the height of summer, we had the team chefs upstairs, and then we had a runner because we had our walk-in fridge downstairs. So our dandies were fed by the walk-in fridge. So we go and get the prep from downstairs and feed it into the dandy fridges. So it's constantly changing over. So it was busy, but we was productive without losing footfall because we could stay in our stations and ready to go. Dandy helped that.
Incredible. Okay. And do you sort of see that it's going to be more... people want more connected kitchens and more working efficiently because of short staff and that kind of thing?
Like hospitality is going, like the footfall is important to make the money that we need to pay for the energy bills, to pay for the national insurance and all the wages. We need to start being busier and moving correctly, and to have that support from a company to help a hospitality company be efficient is incredible. You need to be able to be quick at what you do, but also have the same consistency and standard. Like Carl says, like a lot of Michelin star chefs are using them because it's brilliant. It's everything's there that you need, and everything's tidy, everything's clean. There's no way you can mess up because it's in your fridges. You know, with an open door fridge, you lose your cold air straight away. So, and when you shut it, you're pushing hot air in. You're gonna your ingredients are gonna be changing all over the time. You know,
it's hard.
So with that, you have to be consistent and, you know, push forward.
And Carl, from your perspective, what? Where do you see that in the next 10 years in kitchens? Is that connected piece?
It's the connective piece, but, you know, first of all, to hear what Craig's saying, it's rewarding in itself just to hear that, how he's used it, how he understands it, how he operates with it. And that's what we want. That's just poetry to me. It's perfect. But moving forward in the next 10 years, I think it will be all about connectivity. I think we'll see more robotics coming into play as well. 100%, especially in the fast food chain operations. I think that's going to be a given in the next few years.
Yeah.
And in fact, I'd say 5 years, that's going to be more. But I think also footprints are going to get smaller. As space gets smaller, more expensive, I think kitchens are going to get smaller. So I think that's going to drive more efficiency requirements. Because I think also kitchens are going to get smaller because they don't need as many staff. You know how hard it is to employ people in the kitchens. It's extremely hard. So if that's the case, they need to look at their menu. They need to drive the menu of what they're actually selling best of, and slim down the menus and drive those more efficiency products that they sell more of, and they need a smaller kitchen. And in that case, that dandy works extremely well in those situations.
You've hit the nail on the head there. I think that's absolutely... just come back from Japan, and it's small kitchens, tighter menus, and you go into these restaurants and there's literally like 2-3 staff, that's it.
That's correct.
But it's very sort of compact, high quality.
And they drive
exactly what you're saying, actually.
Yeah.
So they're kind of almost ahead of us in that way.
Yeah, it's going to drive that here. That's what it's going to be. You're going to have more smaller restaurants as well. I think that, you know, something like Craig's doing, whether he takes a step to actually one day have his own little restaurant.
So that's exactly what you're saying. Like Bourne Oyster, people come in and like, how are you working in that kitchen? It's such a small kitchen. But the owner, Simon and Nadine, they designed the kitchen so we didn't have to do footfall, like the walk around.
Everything
was in our spot. So people are like, how are you doing? Because we're efficient. And that's most important, being efficient, but also having the same consistency every time they come in and every time they're eating.
That's what it's about, consistency.
That's it. And that's one of the hardest things in hospitality. You can do as many numbers you want. If you're not prepared, you're going to fail. A dandy helps them to be prepared, ready to go, ready for war, we call it in the summer. Ready for war, we're ready for war, ready for battle. And right, we have our team meetings and we got together and we smashed it every day. Like, that's what I miss right now is the summer. I love the summer because it's like graft, pedal to the metal, but it was there, ready to go, clean, tidy, pushed forward. Again, like even Carl talked about servicing and any breakdowns with a dandy as well. If something happened, you call them up, there's a little code inside the fridge door, give them the code number, it's traceability. They know exactly where your fridge is. They know exactly when it was brought, they know exactly what needs been done on it, the service agreement's there, they're without the next day, ready to go. It might be a bit of a pain in the ass if you're in a tight space and you've got to pull a fridge out, but once it's there, you try and get it done, once the service ready to go again. Within 24 hours, your fridge is up and running again if it's something went wrong. And that's important.
Which is quite rare these days.
With
service and spare parts. Week or even longer, I'm hearing a lot with some people. So, you know, you know, Craig, running your own business and running a successful restaurant, recruiting staff, retaining staff, like, it's difficult. How do you keep brigade motivated? And Carl, for you, you know, top tier equipment, does that help, you know, with retaining staff?
So for me, it was high energy, always high energy and always positive. Like, going to the kitchen, no matter what happened, you know, problems were there to be solved, and we always solved them problems. And keeping teams. So my team, when I was at Bourne Oyster, three of the chefs were kitchen porters when I first started. And then at the end of my 7 years, they're running my kitchen for me. It's like, that's incredible movement, like, from a kitchen porter to move up the rank within 7 years and you're running a kitchen. So the retention rate is high if you put into your staff. If you give back to your staff, which Bourne Oyster, Simon Dean, always give back to staff. They always give to us everything we needed. Say, if I needed a bit of equipment, I got it next day because we needed the tools to do our job. We had to do it because the high rate of people coming through the door, the food service, we always designed the menu to be efficient but also manageable. And that's very important. So with a dandy, we'd done the menus, but we also had the fridge drawer set up. So we had done, put all our prep in there, where we put our prep to make it more efficient as well. So, yeah, so the attention rate was like high energy, make sure all problems are solved. Mate, there's always going to be a 4 o'clock in the morning text message saying, chef, I can't come in today. Okay, no worries, we crack on. But you have to put into your teams, you have to give back to your teams, or you're not going to get nothing back. You know, if you just go, you're a chef, like the old days of chef mentality is you're in, you're grafting hard. It's, you've got to have a good work-life balance. Yeah. You know, Bourne Oyster is amazing. Like, I've done a four-day week, so literally 4 days on, 3 days off. Okay. You know, I was there early morning and there late at night, but all my hours was done in 1 day. You know, or I crossed the 4 days in 1 day, which meant chefs can have 1 day to sleep and rest, one day to sort their lifestyle out, and 1 day to enjoy with their friends and family. Mm. And that's the positive thing about it. You have to have a good work-life balance. And that's where hospitality's got to change. You know, it's got to have that balance where you do work in hospitality. You've got to work hard. And to give you the best, you've got to put the hours in. Don't get me wrong, but you need to rest, because without your rest, you can't push forward and be the best you can be.
No. It's very important. You're burnt out.
You know, like an office worker, 9 to 5, they go in at 9, finish at 5, happy days, they're done. Mm. And then if someone calls in sick, you're like, okay, we just get someone else in the office.
Yeah, well, that's wait till next day.
Exactly. But in hospitality, it can't happen. You have to run. There have been days where, with my sous chef, that we'd do like 150, 200 covers with just three of us, you know, and that's graft. But I had the tools and the equipment I needed to do my job, which I was very grateful and very lucky to have, a blessed, to be fair. Mm. Because not where I am in Thanet, lots of kitchens, and not, we're not London-based, we've not got all the technology. Thanet is an area where restaurants are up and coming, but also there's a budget. We're seaside, we're very seasonal. Mm. It's busy in the summer, happy days, but the winter it goes very quiet. So I was very lucky to be in an environment where Simon didn't give me the tools I needed to do my job. And that's what we had. So having a dandy drawers changed the game for me. Like, everything was there and I didn't have to worry at all, because I know once my prep was done, it's in there, it's almost like safe, locked up, like taking your child to childcare. I'm putting my pieces of halibut in the fridge, like, there you go, see you tomorrow, see you tonight, you know. It's just like looking after it, you know. It's brilliant that way.
And Carl, just, you know, having, I mean, obviously listening to Craig, it does, but do you think it does?
Because I think it's important. I think whether it's a dandy drawers or it's a combi or it's a cooking suite, I think the most important thing is reliability. Because if something's failing and the chef's trying to cook and trying to get on with his job, daily job, he doesn't want something that's failing, first of all. Mm-hmm. So by having something that, you know, is going to work consistently, you know, like Craig says, your mind's at ease. Now, another major benefit with the drawers, if you think about your kitchen at home and you go back 10, maybe 20 years, used to have a cupboard doors. Mm. So it's very much revolved in the kitchen, where a drawer, you can open it, it's easy access, where a door, you've got to bend down.
Yeah, yeah.
So in a kitchen, you've got to bend down, if it was a door, and look at the back. And one of the most important things that you can do in a dandy drawer is stock rotation.
Yeah,
Craig can vouch for this. How many times, if he's had a door and a young chef has forgot something at the back and it's been there for week, 2 week, 3 week, with the in-dandy drawer, you can rotate that stock.
Yeah, where in a door,
you can see it all. Whereas in the door, you're bending down as well. So, you know, on an employee's back, bending down every 2 minutes to get down to get the stock, look in. Whereas on the drawer, you open it, you can bend over, see what you got and produce it quicker. So from that aspect, it does help the employer and make it a little bit easier for them.
Yeah. Okay. And Craig, you know, we started your own business now, but if people are thinking about starting a restaurant or anyone that is a startup, any kind of advice you could give them that they might want to consider as opening up a business and catering?
So that phrase I said, get comfortable being uncomfortable, it goes in straight away.
Okay.
You're from salary to zero and you're everyone. You're social media manager, finance, everything. You're the chef, you're the front of house, and it's scary. It is bloody scary, but if you want to succeed, you've got to do it. You've got to push forward. But what I would say is speak to people. You're not on your own. There's so many people out there that can help you. Like Carl says, with a dandy, with startup restaurants and startup kitchens, they offer finance packages that can help them in the long term.
Mm.
You know, I speak to my suppliers every day. You know, and I've worked with them for 25 years. I found a newfound respect for my suppliers. I was that chef for 25 years going, how much is that pit of halibut? How much is that carrot? How much are them carrots? How much are them tomatoes, right? And I'll be standing there, right, you need to do that cheaper for me. You need that cheaper for me. Now owning my own business, I'm getting people coming to me going, can I have this? I'll put this menu forward. That's the price. And like, can you do it cheaper? I'm like, oh, I was that person. I was literally always bargaining with my suppliers, go get cheaper. But that's my price. That's what I've got to do to pay my bills, you know. But speak to people. They've got years of knowledge and background that can help you push forward as a business. And like today, like Dandy reached out to me to come and do this podcast conversation. Like Carl's speaking about the fridges, some bits and pieces I didn't even know about. And it's speaking of people that are in the business, in the industry, and getting that knowledge to move forward in your own business. So one day when I do have my own restaurant or my own little 20-seater, which I aspire to one day, obviously I can't afford it yet because obviously everything's so expensive, but I will definitely be having a dandy fridges in my restaurant, and they'll be used to the same ability as Warren Oyster.
Okay, and just to finish this segment, then we're going to go on to a bit of a quick fire round. If you both had a magic wand and you could invent one piece of equipment or technology that doesn't exist, tough question, what would it be? Or maybe improve a bit of kit that is already there, maybe.
I think we've kind of touched on it for me before, is the monitoring, where we can predict any issues that are going to happen in the kitchen.
Yeah.
For me, that's what it's about.
Okay.
Because that just takes a lot of hassle away.
Yeah.
I mean, if whether it's your combi or your cook and suite, if it goes down, never mind about the refrigeration, you're stuck, that's it.
Mm.
You can't do nothing about it. If you have the technology that can all of a sudden show or flex whether it's going to come down or not, and get ahead of time to get a service engineer to that piece of kit and get it up and running quickly, that's gold.
Yeah, and for sure it's coming with AI and things
think
like
so.
That. I mean, you know, it's there.
You
know, when you can get AI that will monitor your email and prioritise things and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think so, the next 5 years it'll be there. There'll be something that will do that, I think, which would be amazing.
I personally think like a virtual assistant, I reckon like an Alexa, I guess. Like you can wake up every morning. I always wake up with one eye open, ready to see my phone with a text message or a phone call, or a supplier's forgotten something. But an AI assistant's like, morning, what's on the agenda today? Is my fridge all open? Are all at temperature? Is my overnight cook okay? Like, it can give me a report in the morning that can say,
is my deliveries on track?
Yeah, is everything an all-in-one basis into one app that can go tell me everything. So almost like another sous chef, really, but a virtual one that's 24 hours, or maybe sort of like a PA. Yeah, I suppose a PA, but I'm not at that stage yet. I can't afford a PA. But a virtual PA would be amazing,
but
right?
I think that's coming.
It's got to be. It's got to be.
It really, I mean, you know, already, like I said, you can get AI, not ChatGPT, much better than that will monitor your email, it will respond to clients.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're already kind of starting using that. They will prioritise things if it's a supplier or if it's an inquiry for a tender or whatever.
But you just need something like that to just put everything in one place to make sure you're efficient as an owner, and making sure consistency is key. Like Carl said, consistency, without consistency, you can't be great.
Cool. Okay, well, near the end, but we're going to do a quick fire round, if that's all right, just something a bit more light-hearted before we wrap up. So, kind of reasonably short answers. You can give me little examples, but try to keep it short and sweet. Ultimate comfort food for you?
Pork dumplings.
Nice.
My local Chinese. She used to come in a restaurant and she used to call me dumpling. Afternoon dumpling, how you doing? Because I love pork dumplings. That's my ultimate comfort food. All the chefs know it as well. That's my snack, pork dumplings.
Wow. Steak pie with mash.
Nice.
And nice gravy.
Comfort nice and food. Traditional. Yeah. Happy for that. Desert island ingredients. So the ingredient, if you're standing on a desert island, the ingredient that you just literally couldn't go without.
I love Maldon salt, like seasonings.
Right, okay.
Seasonings everything for me. I love Maldon salt. Like, I can use it for everything. It's curing, seasoning. It's just such a good thing to have. Got to have seasoning and everything, right?
He's got it. I wrote down salt.
Oh, seriously?
Transforms everything.
It changes everything.
Changes everything.
Yeah, I like that. Kitchen soundtrack. You can have car soundtrack if you like, Carl, or Office.
Yeah, well, for me, I was always renowned for having 80s blaring. I've loved the 80s. I'm an 80s baby, 1986, I'm in my 40s. I'll tell you something, in the restaurant, you tell me off for having the 80s playlist playing. I'll be like, but it gets the customer going, and the amount of people come past the pass going, that playlist is amazing. I told you, I'm having the 80s on today, like the 80s is back. Especially on a Saturday night, you've got Elton John, it's ready to go. 80s plays for me.
Classic rock.
Nice.
Foo Fighters or The Who.
Oh, wow.
Back to the 60s.
Nice. Not to go negative, but worst kind of trend that you've seen? Maybe old, gone by now, maybe that's passed.
Do you know what? My old boss at Bourne was going to hate me, but we got given some sushi boats. Have you seen them?
No.
So they're boats, wooden bamboo boats that were served sushi in, and we was going to do the kids' meals out of them.
Okay.
And I was like, no way, I can't use them. I can't serve food in boats. It's just stressing me out. Like, every time, like, she's trying to kids' meals in for the boy. The kids will love it because obviously, boy and oyster, nautical themes, the boat. And you know what? I was like, oh, please, no, I can't have like a really good bit of food going out and a boat going next to it.
Both.
But and I was like, in the end, I was like, you know what? It's fun dining. That's what's about, like, food, fun dining, enjoying food.
The kids like it.
They loved it. Did we like serving it? It's like, get the boats, the big old bamboo boats. Like, here we go. But, you know, that was, for me, one of the worst food trends, going a bamboo boat. But it works. It works for some people. For me, it's like, especially doing a 100, 200 cover service, like, not the boat. Please, not the boat.
Carl?
Style over substance. There's nothing more irritating than a plate comes out. It looks fantastic, but it tastes awful.
Yeah.
So for me, it's all about, you know, the taste.
I like that answer.
Yeah,
so best meal. Can you think of best meal that you've ever eaten, but you didn't cook it yourself?
Well, for me, years ago, we went as a team. We saved up all our service and for the year, and we took the whole team, not a Bourne Oyster restaurant years ago, we took the whole team and the kitchen porters to Petrouse, Gordon Ramsay Petrouse.
Oh, lovely.
And we saved our service for the year. We went out at the chef's table, and it was
very nice.
Incredible. Like, we paid that price, and the kitchen porters kind of understood as chefs why we love food so much. They were throwing extra courses. We actually got to try Petrouse, and that's expensive, right?
Yeah.
And the bill at the end was like astronomical for the amount. There's about 12 of us, but the experience was like hospitality, second to none. And I was like, that is why I'm a chef. Like, that is service, that is hospitality, that is food, and it's the best of the best. That was probably my favourite meal. And it was so nice to see the chefs and my team underneath me seeing what we do on a day-to-day
basis. Great experience for them as well.
Yeah, because they're like, fantastic. Why are these chefs going crazy over something like cooking a dish? That's not right. Because it's got to be perfect. And that, for me, was perfection. Going around with truth is perfection. Absolute perfection. Never forget it.
Perfect.
For me, tasting menu on a Spanish coast with the ingredients treated with respect, and it just tasted absolutely fantastic. So nice. Something simple, but it was good.
Sounds sexy, actually.
Yeah, I like that. Another seafood theme. So, dream dinner guest. So, like, one person that you'd really want to invite, dead or alive, to sit at your chef's table, Carl, in your case, a chef's table that you're maybe hosting. Who would you have?
For me?
Yeah.
Right, so there's a guy called Greg Essex. Now, Greg Essex was the head honcho at Billingsgate Fish Market. He just recently passed away.
Right.
Very good friend of mine, a mentor of mine, a guy that used to support me a lot. Used to be on the Instagram straight away. Met with him. Sally, his wife's amazing. He's got a beautiful family. But he sadly passed away. If I could, and he was a proper foodie. He's always in Smith's. He's that geezer that was walking around fish market, Jack the Lad, selling all sorts. Boxes of celebrations, Max Factor makeup, while throwing a salmon over your head. But that guy was always there when you needed him. If I could bring him back now, and now I've got my own business, I'd love to cook for him again. I'd love to sit with him and enjoy a meal with him. That guy got me through some of my toughest times in hospitality, just nice. Being there on hospitality. But if I bring back Greg Essex again, then that'd be a drink on through for me, because that is just quality.
Nice personal one as well.
For me, Anthony Bourdain. So he understands travel, food. He understands it well. He talks about it in a genuine way. So I think it'd be an interesting conversation with him. So that's the one.
And the final one, proudest moment.
Proudest moment for me, it's going to be my children. With my partner Shah, like, without her I couldn't do anything, because you need a good woman on board to support what I'm doing. I'll drive her mad, but also she's given me my best recipes yet, my two children, Eddie and Lily. Like they are my best recipes. I put everything into them and they give me everything back. They are my proudest moment, like, through everything, all the win. What I'm doing now is to make them proud, that their dad's doing really well, so building a future for them. But that is my pinnacle, my two children.
For me, on the Adandi front, it's all about, you know, for me, improving the kitchens for the chefs. You know, hearing Craig's story, that to me, that's gold. That beats any award.
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
So for me,
and the journey that you've really been on, correct, in that last sort of 17, 18 years to where it is now.
Yeah, so that works for me, and that beats any award.
Cool. Well, thank you both for coming on the show.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's a great way to finish, Craig and Carl. Hope you both enjoyed it.
Yeah, amazing.
Good.
It's been a pleasure having you here. If you want to hear more about Craig's work and what he does, you can visit margatechef.co.uk.
That's correct, yeah.
And get hold of Craig. And equally, if you want to get in touch with Carl or one of his team, visit adandi.co.uk. I'm sure they'd be happy to help. So that's it for this episode. Hit subscribe or rate the podcast when you get a moment. For the podcast that lifts the lid on the food service, equipment and culinary sector. I hope you've enjoyed the episode. I've been your host, Radford Chancellor, and you've been listening to Kitchen Curiosity.
Kitchen Curiosity is written and hosted by Radford Chancellor and is edited and produced by Tom Anderson. Kitchen Curiosity is a Sound Rebel production.